Hi, hello, and welcome back to the show. I'm so excited for today's episode. I got an opportunity to interview Dr. Pariya, who is a licensed naturopathic doctor. We talked about so many things from going on the pill to PCOS, candida, estrogen dominance and what you can do about that, progesterone and how you can increase it, so many different topics. Even PMDD was talked about, which I thought was so cool and so great to get insight into, as I know so many women struggle with PMDD. I wanted to say that if you are interested in working with Dr. Pariya, I will have all of her information linked in the show notes of this episode. She's amazing. She was insightful. I thought that she had a very awesome approach to health and wellness. I felt like it was very balanced. I think anyone who gets a chance to work with her will be in very great hands. And I'm just so excited for you guys to hopefully learn something from this episode. I think that so many women struggle with their hormones. I mean, I personally struggle with PCOS. And even from this episode, I learned so much about PCOS and how you can manage and even go about PCOS in the first place. Thank you again to Dr. Pariya for agreeing to be on this podcast and for being so insightful. And with that said, let's get right into this episode.
It's nice to meet you. I feel like I always know people, but I know I don't like know them just from social media.
I know. I totally relate to that. I'm like, I feel like I've already learned so much from you and we're just meeting for the first time. Yeah. I wanted to start off by thanking you so much for agreeing to go on this podcast. I really appreciate it. I know you must be so busy. But I am going to jump right into this because I actually had listeners send in their questions and there were so many great ones that I want to make sure we cover all of our bases and also get to some of their questions as well. To start off, I would love for you to just tell us a little bit about why you chose naturopathic medicine versus Western medicine, what drove you to that decision, and kind of like what your practice looks like.
Similar to most people that end up on the wellness path and just within natural medicine, I just had a lot of my own health problems when I was in my early 20s. So I went to undergrad for biology. And when I graduated, I took a gap year and I wanted to go down the pharmacy route. So I was working at a pharmacy. I was a pharmacy technician. I took my PCAT. I was like doing the interviews for pharmacy school and stuff. And about a month before I was supposed to start school, I ended up dropping out and rerouting towards natural medicine because during that entire year that I was on this track, I was dealing with hormonal imbalances coming off the pill. I had gut issues. I had anxiety, just all sorts of stuff. And I was getting really frustrated with the care that I was receiving. And I ended up looking into things myself, much like everyone else, and finding the world of natural medicine. And it helped me so much more than going to my conventional doctor. So I decided that this was the career I wanted to pursue instead. So now I work with a lot of the similar issues that I had. I work with gut issues, hormone issues, mostly women in their 20s, 30s, 40s. And I do a lot of the in-depth testing that I wish I had when I was younger. And we really work on like lifestyle and bringing in herbs and all sorts of good things that help shift patterns and get people to where they want to be.
That is so amazing. Thank you so much for answering that. So you mentioned birth control. Mm-hmm. I personally, just a little bit of a background on my situation and the reason that I found naturopathic medicine so helpful. Basically, I was on the pill for about 7 years of my life. And when I decided to come off, I switched the copper IUD. And within a year of switching, I completely lost my cycle and I started experiencing weird symptoms. My hair was falling out. I couldn't sleep. I was gaining what felt like weight at the time. I now realized was just inflammation. Like everything started to get puffy. My body, my face specifically, like I was holding so much puffiness in my face. And the biggest indicator that something was wrong was I lost my period. And I went to like 3 different gynecologists. I even went to a thyroid specialist and they were all kind of like, everything looks fine. Your T3, my T3 seemed like a little bit off, but not even like close enough to where, you know, both my parents are in Western medicine. My dad reviewed my labs and he was like, everything seems fine. So they were kind of like, well, you can just go back on birth control. You were getting a period through that. I was like, but I wasn't getting a period through that. And even on birth control, I was on the NuvaRing for a very long time. And I was also experiencing horrific symptoms. Like every time that I would put in the ring the day of, I would get extremely nauseous. I would have like this severe feeling of overwhelming anxiety, and within a few days it would go away. But even just to like know that that would happen to me every single month, I would sometimes be in the bathroom making myself throw up just to make the feeling of that nausea to go away. It seems so severe to me, and it seems so like I was not given any of the insight into this. They were kind of like, well, if you have any side effects, call us and we'll explain them. What is your opinion on birth control? Because obviously the other side of that, and I'm sure you can relate to this as a woman, like it does give women freedom over the reproductive health.
I think you brought up a really good point with the reproductive freedom. I think that's the really important distinction to make, is that birth control should be used for contraceptive care. So if you're someone who needs it for that reason, that's what you want to go on it for. And let's say not everyone's a candidate for a fertility awareness method. Like, I think it's a great method. I practice it, but I'm also in a long-term partnership. So it's a little bit different for me. I have a little bit more of a safety net. I'm not concerned about, you know, pregnancy to the level that someone who's potentially not in a relationship would be. So I think that, first of all, it doesn't serve anyone to say no birth control whatsoever. I know a lot of wellness people say that, but I think there just needs to be a balance. I think we need to first understand, do you need it for contraceptive reasons? And if so, let's get you on a form that works best for your body. But then let's also talk about ways you can optimize your body while you're on it. Like, let's support your adrenals, let's support your liver, let's support your gut, let's make sure you're getting all your nutrients in. Let's do all the things that we know can be exacerbated by birth control. So that way, while you're on it and while you are, you know, creating essentially a, I don't want to say your hormones are shut down, but you're altering your hormonal pathways, let's just make sure everything else is in a good place so that when you eventually come off of it, your health will be in a better standing. And then what I think what happens to most people, which I don't agree with, is you might be like 12, 13, 14, however old you are when you first go to the doctor, you have your period and you're like, it really hurts or it's irregular. What do I do? And they're like, take the pill. I think that is a cop out. I don't think that's the best approach, especially at a young age when our bodies are just trying to figure out their hormonal cycles. There's so much we know we can do to help support the body to get better cycles. So I think that's where the issue is. And that's where I see a lot of women getting not the care that they deserve. I work with a lot of people that have been on birth control for like a decade and they're scared to go off of it because they have no idea what the hormones are going to do. So that's kind of my two cents on it. I just think there needs to be more awareness around what to do if you aren't going on it for contraceptive reasons and what are the options to really naturally tackle your period.
Thank you so much for that answer. That's great. And I completely agree with you that there is a purpose to it, but I think it's just being overused in other ways that maybe shouldn't, you know, they shouldn't be overused. So let's say someone is young or has a young child and they're saying, hey, I'm having very painful periods, and they go to the doctor and they're being told, we can put you on the pill. What would be other alternative things that they can do to, you know, figure out what's going on with their hormones? And what do you see most common? Like, why do so many women experience irregularities that way, like painful periods and irregular periods, especially early on in their life?
Yeah. So if you're a teenager going to the doctor and you have period issues, assuming that it's not a condition like endo or PCOS that's driving the issues, let's say you just have bad PMS, then for most people that age range, it's really a product of their lifestyle. And when you're in your teens, your body's really resilient to change. So it really doesn't take all that much to get someone on the right track at that age range. You don't have the cumulative health effects that you might have in your 20s or 30s after like decades of not taking care of your health. So when we're teens, we're thinking about things like, are they eating enough? Are they eating nutrient-dense diets? Most teens aren't, because you're not really thinking about that stuff. You know, you're going to school, you're eating school food, you're hanging out with your friends. There's the whole big conversation around eating disorders in that age range. They aren't sleeping enough. Like, there's so many lifestyle things that could be done to help support the body and get things on a good track. So what I would first start with for someone at that age is dive into the lifestyle, maybe bring in some minimal supplements, things like your magnesium, B vitamins, anti-inflammatories to help nudge things in the right direction. And usually that's more than enough. Sometimes there's deeper reasons, like I said, those conditions that we need to investigate, or maybe there's something going on with gut health. So that's kind of where I would start.
Perfect. And I would love to actually dive into gut health. I had someone say, hey, could you talk about anything gut health related? SIBO, candida, bloating, indigestion, inflammation. So obviously there's this big shift now of people realizing that your gut is like your second brain. It really affects so many things. This is something interesting that I don't think I've ever shared on social media ever, but when I first went to the gynecologist and, you know, finally I was like, you know what, I'll take the pill. Let's do it. I just want to have a regular cycle. Like, I just want to basically bleed and get rid of some of this inflammation and hope that it kind of goes away. They ended up prescribing me the pill, which I have never taken before in my entire life. But as I was saying, at that point, I had already been missing my cycle for about 6 months, experiencing horrific, like indigestion symptoms, from horrible gas to not going to the bathroom for days. So then I would go and I would have like diarrhea. I mean, this is so TMI, but when they prescribed me the pill, I took it for about 2 months and I did not get a period and my gut health got even worse. And what I think happened, what I'm realizing happened, is that I think that my gut health was already so bad that I actually wasn't in like digesting the pill. It wasn't getting absorbed through my gut. So I guess my question is, do hormones affect your gut? Or does your gut affect your hormones? I guess that would be a good place to start.
So when it comes to that connection between the gut and the hormones, it's both. Both affect one another in a variety of different ways. It's really, everything in your body is affecting one another. There are some things that might hold a little bit more weight, but all of the pathways in our body are affecting one another, especially where hormones are concerned. So when we're looking at how the gut's impacting our hormones, one of the bigger things I see is there constipation going on? Because if you're not having regular bowel movements, you're not properly getting like your estrogen metabolites out of your system. So you might fall into the category of higher estrogen symptoms. So I see that being a really big connection that often happens. And there actually is a set of bacteria in your gut called the estrobilum that's responsible for how you're metabolizing excess estrogen out of your system. So if you have gut issues, that whole segment of your bacteria can be off and that could be impacting your hormones. And then of course, if there's gut issues going on, there's usually inflammation going on. There's toxins like LPS being secreted, which basically what they do is they can rev up your stress response. They can increase cortisol. And then we know cortisol is our stress hormone. If cortisol is high or it's all over the place, that could impact our sex hormones, especially our progesterone. So we start to see like this higher estrogen picture, lower progesterone, and that can really fuel a lot of PMS and painful cycles. So that's a little bit of how the gut impacts the hormones. And then when we're looking at how the hormones impact the gut, I would say your thyroid's probably the bigger piece to look at, because your thyroid can really slow down or speed up your gut motility, and that can cause a lot of issues. So this is why it's important to look at the whole picture, and it's really hard to piece out like, let's just focus on this, because it's never one organ system. It's all of them interacting with one another. I'm trying to remember. Oh, the second part of your question was what to do for the gut. I would say always get tested, do comprehensive stool testing. It can be on the pricier end, but I've seen so many people spend years doing trial and error on their gut with like random supplements and things like that. And they end up wasting a lot more money that way. So I would definitely say work with someone to get that stool test done and really just see it laid out what your imbalance is.
So if a patient comes into your office and they're like, hey, I'm struggling with my hormones, maybe I have gut issues, do you get a gut test and a hormone test, or do you just focus on one or the other?
Yeah, usually I do both. So I'll do the comprehensive testing and then we'll have their first appointment. So that way we know exactly what we're working with, and then we can dive right into it. I think it's really hard, especially once you get into natural medicine, to play around and guess around with what's going on, because so many herbs are very specific in their actions, or same with like supplements. So you want to know exactly what's going on before you start trying to treat it. But of course, there's a lot of lifestyle stuff you can do before that. You know, you don't have to jump right into supplements and herbs. If someone's at a place where they can't afford testing, it can't afford those higher interventions, then we just start with lifestyle and we work on like eating and movement and stress management and all those foundational things.
Let's talk about candida, because that's something that people see a lot. Could you explain what that is? Could you explain why it's so hard to get rid of? And, you know, again, when you go to Western medicine, something I personally struggled with, they were like, well, here's antibiotic. And I'm like, wait a minute, but if I take the antibiotic, it's going to kill all the good bacteria. And we know that the effects of antibiotics last for years and years. So what would be a naturopathic way to go about candida?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I see people going about it the wrong way all the time. So candida is a yeast, and it's an opportunistic yeast. We all have it within our bodies. We all have it in our microbiome. We just have a certain amount of it. And within that threshold, it's normal. It's healthy. It actually helps out our body. So what ends up happening is, since it's an opportunistic microbe, it takes advantage of a weakened system. So if there's something else going on in your body that weakens the immune system, compromises like your gut, if your hormones are off, then candida can go into overgrowth. I see it a lot after antibiotic use. If someone has a really bad diet, if there's something else going on in the gut that could be fueling it, like if there's a parasite or something, or if someone has really high estrogen, like all those things can feed into a high candida picture. So then what I end up seeing people doing is going on these crazy anti-candida diets and like taking all these candida herbs, and they're just constantly like depleting and like stressing out their bodies even more. And their candida doesn't go anywhere, because stress is also a big link for candida overgrowth. So it's almost like you're so focused on the symptom of something else bigger. It's almost like symptom management by trying so hard to tackle the candida that you're missing whatever it is that's going on that's causing the candida to go into overgrowth, because candida is not just going to do it on its own. It's not like picking up a parasite or having something come in and all of a sudden you have an overgrowth of it. It's something else is going on that's fueling it. So taking a step back and trying to figure out what that thing is going to make a bigger impact than all the crazy candida things that are out there.
That's how you go about healing it. Then you would focus on, okay, if you have estrogen dominance, that let's bring out that dominance. Okay. So yeah, because again, like, yeah, even those diets, I mean, they feel so restrictive. I remember when I was dealing with it and I actually went to a different naturopathic doctor and she was like, well, you know, it's going to be really hard. Like you can't eat any sugar. And I was like, okay, but I have a history of like restrictive dieting. Like this feels really intense. So it's interesting. When I started acupuncture, my acupuncturist was, I feel like he really helped me. And yeah, he put me on herbs, but they weren't like intense herbs. Mm-hmm. And slowly but surely, I started to see like my tongue get different. Like I saw more red, more vibrant, whereas before I would notice it had like the little white coating. And I don't think that I had intense candida symptoms. I don't think it was like a crazy overgrowth, but I definitely noticed myself feeling better. So that's good to know. Now, what about SIBO? Because again, SIBO, I mean, the test itself is like 4 hours long or something crazy like that. I could be mistaken.
Yeah. So that's probably the breath test you're talking about, which is pretty much the gold standard for it. You want to do the breath test to get it diagnosed. SIBO, I see there's a big connection with your thyroid with it, and really anything that can cause your gut motility to slow down. Because what's really happening is people that are prone to constipation, if you have a slow, sluggish bowel movements, then that creates a space for bacteria to go into overgrowth. So there's usually some sort of motility issue at the root of SIBO, whether it's thyroid or you're not getting enough fiber or there's something going on with diet, or there could be something else that initially caused constipation in the gut, like other types of bacteria. And then over time that allowed room for, you know, bacteria to go into overgrowth in the small intestines instead. So SIBO, again, is one of those things. I see it more often for someone who's had a longer history of like gut issues or just health issues and it's gone untreated. It's not something that most people wake up overnight and they're like, oh my gosh, now I have SIBO. It's really like a consequence of long-term gut issues.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This was one of my close friends asked this question. She was like, can you please make sure that you cover PMDD? She's been struggling with this for a very long time. I've seen her struggle with it. you know, it's not something that I personally have ever experienced. I find that my periods, especially after getting them regular and all of that, they're easy to manage, I guess would be a good way. But when she gets her cycle, she gets her period, her emotions are so intense. She says that she experiences almost like an out of body experience. Like her emotions is the number one thing, but also really painful breasts and extreme indigestion issues. And like, you know, she's gone to doctor, and all they do is they'll test her estrogen and progesterone. And they're like, well, it's all within range, so we don't really know what to tell you. It must be in your head. So then she's like, I feel crazy, but I really feel out of control.
PMDD is so different than PMS because if someone has PMDD, their receptors on their cells are more sensitive to hormones. So you and I, we can tolerate going through our luteal phase where there's, you know, transitions and peaks and drops in our estrogen and progesterone levels, and we're fine with it as long as, you know, things are reasonably under control. If our hormones are balanced, we're not going to have major issues. But for someone that has PMDD, their receptors are sensitive. There's a genetic element to it. So they feel those hormonal fluctuations probably like 10, 20, however many times harder than you and I do. So the very first piece that I always work with PMDD is, let's get really comprehensive hormone testing done, because the more we can try to optimize your hormones, the better it is. The more we can bring your estrogen from a place where it's high to a place where it's good, so it's not dropping as severely, the better it's going to feel. So sometimes with the lab tests that you do through your conventional doctors, they might not test during the right time of the month. The ranges are really wide for what they're looking at. So it's not always the best way to go about it. I like to do the Dutch test, especially for that luteal sample, to see what's going on. And then the other piece of it is there's going to have to be more of like that long-term neurotransmitter support. So things like magnesium and taurine are really helpful, or B vitamins, bringing in some herbs that can really support the nervous system, just bringing in that component of it and having that be more of the long-term support. Because you know, with PMDD, you do need more long-term support because you really have to support how your cells are essentially interacting with your hormones to make it less of a harsh experience every time you get your period.
Thank you so much for answering that. Now, we have about 20 minutes left of the podcast, and I really wanted to save the last 20 minutes for specifically PCOS. So obviously that's near and dear to my heart. That's what I was diagnosed with. It took me a long time to get that diagnosis because every time I went to the doctors, they'd be like, I would ask them about PCOS and they'd be like, no, you don't have it. And then when I finally got the diagnosis, they called it lean PCOS. Mm. Anyways, they offered me the pill. I tried that for 2 months. It wasn't even getting absorbed. I said, screw that. And I found an acupuncturist who was like 85 years old. He's from Korea. He was also an herbalist. And I remember coming to him and just venting for like an hour, being like, this is what they told me. They said I could never have kids naturally and this. And he was like, okay, just give me 6 months. Like, give me 6 months. It's going to take some time. It's going to take trial and error, but I'm going to help you figure it out. I will go back to the doctor now and they will tell me that I was misdiagnosed with PCOS. So it's really frustrating because obviously, like, is it just that we don't understand what PCOS is? You know, people say the cysts are what causes you to have those symptoms. And then other people say it's the symptoms that cause you to have the cyst. Like, what could you explain what PCOS is, why so many women are affected by it? And the last question is, can it be cured, or what does it mean if it is cured? Is it just the symptoms are gone?
Yeah, there's different types of PCOS. So each one's really different. Cysts alone on your ovaries isn't enough to get diagnosed for PCOS. A lot of healthy women might have cysts on their ovaries and it's not an issue. I think the criteria is you need to meet two of the three of the following, whether it's you have cysts, you have the high androgen symptoms, or have like missed periods. So we're really looking at kind of like that, the three. But even within those three, it doesn't fully explain what's going on. So from my experience and from the way I've studied it and what I know of PCOS is there's a number of things that can cause it. It could be metabolically driven, which it is in a lot of women. So there might be a blood sugar component to it. So that can really fuel PCOS, because if we have insulin resistance, the way that insulin's being secreted, it's communicating with our ovaries, it's increasing testosterone production. So we see this cycle going on of insulin resistance contributing to the higher androgens. For a lot of women, it might be inflammatory. So for someone that had a lot of gut issues going on, there's a lot of inflammation in the body that can fuel an inflammatory PCOS. It could be driven by stress. There could be high DHEA that could cause it. So that could be another realm of it. And then there's also post-pill PCOS, which is actually what happened to me after I came off the pill. I was diagnosed with PCOS because my testosterone really shot up and my periods were all over the place. And I was told, okay, you have PCOS, go back on the pill. And I was like, whoa, I just came off the pill. What are you talking about? And I didn't have this beforehand. So we see that transient post-pill PCOS too. So it's so variable and PCOS is so complex. And I think a lot of people have an outdated view of what it means, what it looks like. And so if you're experiencing those symptoms, again, it's really important to look deeper. What's going on with the hormones? What's going on with the gut? What are sources of inflammation? What are your adrenals doing? Are you really producing a lot of DHEA? So like sifting through all of these things is really important, because that can help you find the best way to manage it. For some people, it is reversible. Like if you have post-pill PCOS, if it's driven by DHEA, things like that, you can get that under control. If it's more metabolic, wow, I keep like messing that up. It's a mouthful. But if it's more along that where you have insulin resistance, then there is more of a long-term care picture seen with it. So it's just super variable. And I think there needs to be more research behind it, more data behind it, because we honestly don't know enough. And telling women they can't get pregnant and they have to go on birth control to manage it is not it. It's not the answer.
I agree with you, because I remember just feeling extremely scared. I was like, you look it up and then it's like the first thing that comes up is infertility. If someone was diagnosed with PCOS and they were able to get their cycle back, is that a good indicator that, you know, they will be able to get pregnant?
It could be. I mean, it's better than not getting your period is what I'll say. But it's a really great sign, because it's showing that your hormones are starting to do what they need to. Obviously, we want to make sure you're ovulating and you're getting enough progesterone. That's going to be the really important piece. Progesterone is really important for getting pregnant and staying pregnant. So sometimes with PCOS, there is a low progesterone picture. So getting the lab testing done to make sure that you are producing enough progesterone in your second half of your cycle is really important. But getting that cycle is that very first step towards, okay, things are moving in the right direction and we're going to get to a place where that can happen. And even if you have, the thing with PCOS is if you are getting your cycle, you're struggling with your progesterone, there's a lot of options out there now where you can start to do some fertility work in terms of doing progesterone in the second half of your cycle to help bring that up, help support pregnancy. So there are ways to support it. And I don't want anyone that has PCOS to think that that is just like it for their fertility. There's no chance they can never get pregnant. There is hope, and there are ways to get you there. You just have to start tackling at your health, and it can take a while. Like that acupuncturist told you, it could take 6 months, 9 months, a year. Hormones take a long time to support, but you know, there is hope.
So yeah, let's talk about progesterone, because obviously progesterone is, we hear that a lot. We hear estrogen dominance and progesterone. What would be some ways, let's say someone is getting their period, but maybe in the second, maybe their cycles are short. Maybe the second part of their cycle, they start to spot and they're more moody and their hair becomes dull and like all these different things. Are those good indicators that your progesterone could be struggling? And what could you do about that in terms of like lifestyle, supplements, and food?
So those all could be good indicators. It could be you have low progesterone, or maybe you actually have good progesterone and you have high estrogen in comparison. So again, that testing is important to figure it out. But I see a super big connection between progesterone and cortisol. If your body's stressed, and I'm not talking about just the mental, emotional stress, though I'm sure a lot of women can relate. If you've had a really stressful month, your period might be late and might mess things up. So you can think of it along that lines. You don't have to be mentally and emotionally stressed though. If your body's stressed out, if there's something going on in your body, whether it's gut issues, liver stagnation, something externally going on like mold exposure, just something that's stressing out the body, your body's not going to produce enough progesterone. It's going to really downregulate that. So looking at sources of stressors is really important, and figuring out how to eliminate those or how to reduce them in order to get your body to feel safe enough in order to want to conceive. That's really the name of the game. So along those lines is, are you working out too much and stressing out your body? Are you not eating enough, or are you eating foods that are really processed and you're not getting your nutrients in? Are you sleeping well? So when we're getting into the realms of supporting progesterone, it's really like, how can we truly optimize your body and your health so that you can create more of this hormone?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So obviously, you know, having a, like, there's some basic things like the morning sunlight, as you've posted so much. I mean, I've learned so much from your page, and I feel like that's actually great, a great place for people to start. I feel like you post very easily digestible. This is a perfect word to use, but easily digestible, daily changes that you can make. And I think after your post was actually when I started doing like, okay, I wake up, I don't look at my phone, I go get 10 minutes of morning sunlight, I will wash my face, I'll journal, I'll just kind of like let your body prepare a little bit before you're bombarded with the stress of your phone and your emails and whatever. If you have the opportunity to do that, obviously a lot of people are not in a position to do that. But if you can somehow carve out some time for yourself to do these little things. And obviously, like you said, exercise plays a huge role, but let's just talk about, gut and supplements. Like what can people take in order to maybe help with estrogen, detoxification? As you said, it happens through your gut. It happens through you going to the bathroom regularly. Like what can someone do to help increase bowel movements, for example, and maybe to help optimize that progesterone, secretion or making in your body?
Yeah. Yeah. So how to support would be liver and gut, I would say. In terms of supplements, really supporting your liver, things like B complexes, NAC is incredible. That's what I put almost every single one of my patients on. Magnesium glycinate, just supporting your liver's detox, because that's the first two phases. And then when it gets to your gut, of course, trying to get daily bowel movements. Yeah. That's a little trickier to say. If you're really struggling while you're waiting to get the answers that you need, magnesium citrate can be helpful because it works on the gut. Same with higher doses of ginger, because ginger helps speed up the motility of your gut. So doing something like a ginger capsule between meals or drinking a cup of ginger between meals can be helpful in getting movement into the gut. And then one of my personal favorites is doing like a chia seed pudding before bed as a dessert, because it's packed with fiber and it's packed with omega-3s. So it'll help reduce inflammation. It'll help keep the bowels moving if you're struggling with your fiber. So those are kind of simple things to start with. And then really focusing in on how can I reduce processed foods and just bring in more whole foods. The more whole foods you can get into your diet, the better, because you're getting more nutrition in, you're eliminating foods that could potentially be inflammatory, and you're just really supporting your body in a way that it needs, because historically that's how we've eaten. I could go off on a rant about processed foods and all that, but I won't do that. I know we have a limited time. But those are some of the ways that I would say are good. I know the raw carrot salad is pretty big too right now for helping get estrogen out of the system. It is helpful because it has calcium deglucarate in it, which basically helps that final stage of binding and excreting excess estrogens.
Yeah, I remember, I think my friend Courtney King, who's also huge on gut health and hormone health and all that, she actually will say that she eats two carrots pretty much a day, two carrots a day to help with estrogen detoxification. So that's so wonderful. Let's say we have five more minutes left, but I would love to cover this part. Insulin resistance, obviously that, like you said, plays a huge role in PCOS. Would you recommend women who struggle with PCOS? Again, this is, you're already having symptoms. So there might be some things you have to cut out of your diet, and sugar could be one of them. Is that something that you would recommend, like really managing your blood sugar? And what are some ways that people can manage their blood sugar?
Yeah. So if you have an insulin-driven PCOS, managing blood sugar is huge. So you really want to be mindful of how are you eating your meals and your snacks. I feel like people always forget about snacks as part of balancing their meals, But with everything that you're eating, whether it's a meal or a snack, you want to look at, does it have enough protein, fats, and fiber to counter whatever carbohydrates are in here? Because a lot of people are eating carb-heavy meals or snacks. That's going to be not so great for your blood sugar in the long term. So if you're really struggling with it and you just have no idea how to start, I recommend working with a nutritionist or a dietitian that's well-versed in it to help you start to understand how to create and structure your plates and how to eat in a way that's blood sugar supportive. You could also consider getting like a 4-week blood glucose monitor, like the continuous ones, so you can start to get an understanding of how the meals you're eating are impacting your blood sugar. Because you might think you're eating something that's awesome for it, and then you actually see the results and you're like, wait, that actually really made my blood sugar spike in a way that it shouldn't have. So those are good places to start. And then of course, some of the supplements that we know are wonderful for insulin, such as myo-inositol in combination with folic acid is amazing. Berberine is really amazing. Chromium, cinnamon. So working with someone to understand what is the best, like perfect package for you at whatever point of your insulin journey you're on.
Great. Thank you so much. I feel like I already learned so much from you. I would love to finish off this podcast with you just sharing, you know, I'm sure there are going to be people who are going to want to work with you. It is really difficult to find, I think, naturopathic doctors that are one taking up clients. It's crazy. The amount that I reached out to personally when I was struggling with PCOS, and they'd be like, we really want to help you, but we're actually really overwhelmed. So are you currently taking on clients, and how would people go about, especially if they're out of state? I know that you actually work with people out of state, right? So how can people go about finding you, and are you currently taking on clients, and just give us the spiel.
Yeah, of course. So you can find me through Instagram or on my website. My Instagram's doctor spelled out doctor.priya, P-A-R-I-A. My website's the same, drpriya.com. So you could go on there and book a free consult to start. It's about a 15-20 minute phone call or Zoom call. So we'll get a chance to meet, talk about your health goals and ultimately what you're trying to achieve. And I can share with you how I can help and if we're a good fit. I offer a variety of ways to work together. You could go down just a la carte where you're doing appointments as you go along and lab testing is needed, or you could do a package. Most of my patients do packages. So we put together one or two complimentary labs along with appointments. And I'm pretty flexible with payment too, because I know that price can be a big barrier. So I offer like in full payment plans across 3 to 6 months. So I try to really work in a way that, you know, works with you. Yeah, that's how you can find me. That's how you can access me. But definitely the discovery call is the best place to start to see if we'd even be a good fit.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for all that you do. I know that I'm speaking for many women. We really appreciate that. I think we just need more. Well, one, we need more women in this field to help. I think that that's huge. I think that there's something about like knowing what you're going through that is really helpful. So thank you so much for all that you do. Thank you for coming on this podcast. I really, really appreciate it. Unfortunately, we have only a minute left, but yeah, I will have everything linked in the show notes so that people can find you. And yeah, thank you again.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was awesome. And it was so great to meet you. Great.